be awesome if we could work in vinyl and how you pranked me by sending me that ridiculous vinyl.
Yeah, I did that.
Which someone thought that it was serious that I bought that. Like, they really thought that I went to the record store and purchased Oral Roberts.
You bought Oral Roberts in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Dustin Faber here with the 16-Bit Catholic Podcast, episode 12, I believe. I think we're on 12. I'm not sure which episode we're on here. I'll tell you in a second because I believe in being accurate with my words. That is episode 12. Yes, I am Dustin Faber. I am here with Sarah Fabulous. She is an upcoming author. She goes by the Twitter handle Catholic Drinky and is a better person than me. I sent you Oral Roberts University, or Oral Roberts, the man, the myth, the rest in peace, the legend. He died.
Yes, you sent me the whole university. It was the nicest gift ever.
That's a heck of a SimCity mod that I just did there for you. But so I sent you, you've gotten into vinyl. I finally spread the love of vinyl, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I bought a record player about 2 weeks ago now, and really I bought it because I bought a record back in the fall and with every intention of purchasing a record player. And then I never bought the record player, and the record just sat there on my bookshelf.
Unloved.
Yeah, going, when are you going to spend me? And so we just, you know, I bit the bullet, made it happen. And now I've got, you know, a growing little collection of maybe about 10 or 11 records.
What record was that? Like, what made you decide to run out and buy a record even though you did not have a player?
Actually, I was at a concert for this guy. His name is Parker Millsap, and he's totally awesome. I love this album. It's amazing. I downloaded it first, and then I realized that he was coming here live to Atlanta to play a small show, and so I had to go check him out. But then I realized he was selling his music on vinyl at the show, and I thought, you know, I've been wanting to get a record player. Maybe if I buy one, it'll be incentive for me to purchase a record player. Well, you know, it only took about 9 months, but we made it happen.
Nice. So what kind of record player did you get?
I got an Audio Technica, the LP60, I think that's what it is. It's their basic one, but it's for a basic record player. It's, I guess, top of the line basic, if that makes sense at all. But it's awesome. I'm really pleased with it. It produces great sound. And really the important thing for me is I needed it, whatever record player I purchased, to be able to plug into my existing surround sound receiver, because I didn't want to have to do anything special with it. So this one fit right on to existing ports on my receiver. And so we're literally rocking and rolling.
That's awesome. Yeah, my record player for about a year or so, it's basically, it collected dust because I didn't have a good stereo to hook it into. It was, I had this really weird setup where it was, the phono would go into the preamp, and then the preamp had some wires that converted into a headphone jack, and then
ain't
the headphone
nobody
jack
time for that.
And then it went into like some regular little computer speakers. And then, so I'm sitting around here, I'm bored because I'm without my family. I'm in Florida right now, and I don't get to see my family for another 2 or 3 months because of this job that I've got. And so I found this guy, and he was selling this old vintage radio on Craigslist or whatever, and went out and got that, and was able to hook my record player into an old 1982 stereo. And oh my soul, I think I'm back like on the vinyl train or whatever you want to call it.
It's really addictive.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I bought Africa by Toto.
You're really obsessed with that. Like, is that like your favorite band or favorite song? Or
it's my song. It's okay. My jam. So I purchased the album. It's my ringtone on my phone. I decided a few years ago that I needed a song to be like my song. And so I picked it, and it's just, it has stuck, and it's actually worked way better than I ever imagined, because now when people hear that song on the radio, I get lots of text messages. Hey, just heard your song. So this is all beyond my wildest dreams of the day that I chose a song for it to have had this effect, but we're going with it. So I had to buy Africa by Toto on vinyl, obviously, because it's just such a great song. I love it. As soon as the magic started and I heard it. It sounds so much better on vinyl than it does on MP3, and it just blew my mind how much better it sounds.
I've been screaming and beating my chest about how great vinyl is since like 2007 when I first like started getting into it. Like it's because it's analog sound. It's not compressed. So it sounds better. I know it's not the most convenient thing in the world. You know, my Boston record I've got right now is scratched. I can't listen to More Than a Feeling, which, you know, I can do that on MP3 or, you know, CD or whatever. But I really, really enjoy it. I'm not going to be, you know, I think the word hipster gets thrown around way too much. You know, if you want to listen to your music on a iPod or a CD player or whatever, then, you know, fine, go ahead and knock yourself out. I'm not gonna look down on you for that or whatever. I just like my records.
Yeah, I can't wait to go and dig through my parents' record collection.
Oh, are you going to a record store day on Saturday?
You know, I don't know if I will. I want to, but I have a friend in town this weekend, and so we have other plans, such as getting mani-pedis and things.
Ah, you should at least try to find some time out of your schedule for record store day on Saturday. It's going to be a blast. They got like new records,
know.
And people are re-releasing records. I think Jimi Hendrix has they re-released some Jimi Hendrix albums. Some Bruce Springsteen albums are getting re-released. The problem is
my budget is like I'm tapped out right now. I can't. This month I've already bought too many records, so I can't really do any more until next month.
What's your favorite record you've bought?
You know, that's a hard one. I might have to either go with the Parker Millsap one or, judge ye not, Taylor Swift.
I'm not going to judge. That's a fun album.
It is really, really good, and she sounds really great on vinyl. And it's just a really fun album. It's really nice to put on and, I don't know, clean the house, do chores, and just kind of enjoy it.
Now, I've listened to that album, but I only like the first four or five songs. I guess I haven't sat down and listened to the, you know, to the rest of it or whatever. But, yeah, it's a fine album and nothing. Why would I, let me ask you, why would I judge you for listening to that album?
Because it's, like, pop music.
So? Pop music is fun. I love pop music and everything about it. I'm not going to be one of those people who says, oh, top 40 radio is garbage. That's not real music. You know what? There's fun music in every genre that you look for.
Well, then I like you more and more.
Oh, goodness. Well, one thing I like, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here, not just talk about vinyl, but you have a book coming out. Tell me about this book. More specifically, why did you write a book?
Yeah, I wrote some words and put them on some pages, and it's going to happen soon. So,
like
a
lot of Twitter messages all put together as one is what it feels
like. You know,
like.
I guess I've never done the math on that. So it's a 40,000 word book. So 40,000 divided by 140, that's 285.71 tweets.
Well, that sounds like me in a day right there.
So, yeah, probably. Yeah, so I wrote a book. It's called The Catholic Drinkies Guide to Homebrewed Evangelism, and I'm putting it out in with Ligori Publications, and so they're a nice Catholic publisher outside of St. Louis in Ligori, Missouri. Really great group of folks, and this all started about a year ago. Ligori reached out to me and asked me if I would be interested in writing a book for them. And so, you know, I asked them a few questions, you know, asked like what the time kind of crunch would be and all of that, and then from there they asked me to write up a book proposal so that they could take it to their board for approval. And so went through that process, board approved it, and then, you know, I wrote the book over the course of a couple of months, and I'm working on the final manuscript now for approval. I'm gonna send it to them probably on Sunday afternoon, and then I won't be able to touch it again until it comes out in June. So you know, really crazy to be asked to write a book. You know, I didn't even pitch them or anything, that they came to me. Just such a really cool thing.
Now, a lot of people, I know a lot of people are probably are thinking, oh, I would love to sit down and write a book and everything. What did you do to merit them reaching out to you to get that book going?
Well, I think it was a matter of a little bit of some of my my blog posts, to just some clever tweets, to writing some blog posts on some big time Catholic blogs like Integrated Catholic Life, and just contributing places. Also, you know, being on a weekly podcast, just sort of having a presence. And they were looking for something different. They realized that I was, you know, not a really terrible writer, so I could put some words on a page. And so, you know, they asked me, and, you know, I know they did a lot of background research before reaching out, and wanted to make sure that I had a proper message. And that was another reason why they had me go through the process of writing the book proposal, was to ensure that, you know, I did have writing skills and that I had enough content and enough ideas that would be worthy of a book.
I like that. So basically, you just keep yourself busy with writing and blogging and doing podcasting and basically throwing yourself at all, you know, every form of media you can think of. And that's how they contacted you.
Yeah, pretty much. Just being active as a Catholic and networking with the right people. You know, I never quite asked them how they decided to contact me, but I think that they got my information from various people who had written books with them before. And so I was just on their radar for a number of reasons, but, you know, networking definitely, I'm sure, played a role.
See, I feel like I'm not disciplined enough when it comes to, you know, blogging and podcasting and stuff like that. Half the time I can't find a co-host or a guest or whatever to do a podcast. Sorry, James Ryan, I know you might be listening, but James, you're always running around on adventures, so you're not always available every single week. And I like to try to mix it up, do pop culture with James, which James is great. You're great at doing the pop culture. But I always try to find like I always want to try to do like a religious angle on the podcast as well. And I think I tweeted out two or three times during Holy Week, hey, I need somebody to talk to me about Holy Week on my podcast. And nobody wrote back. So apparently priests are busy during Holy Week. Who would have known such a
wait,
such
what?
A thing?
They're busy? No.
So, you know, we'll work on that. So, but yeah, I feel like I don't have enough discipline. I'll sit down like, I need to write something. But then I will see a game on my computer and I'll be like, oh, well, maybe I need to play some Grand Theft Auto 5 instead. And so I'll sit down and I'll, you know, I'll look up and it's 3:30 in the morning. And I'm like, oh, wow, I just totally wasted a bunch of time, depending on how you look at that. So
yeah, see, you play video games to waste time. I sit and write and read and tweet and come up with content to waste time, where I look at the clock and I say, oh shoot, it's after midnight and I'm still sitting at my computer.
So how did you work on that discipline? How did you get the discipline to sit down and write the book? Because that's a lot of words to put down. That's not something you can do in a day.
No. It was definitely a challenge. I ended up just having to tell some friends, like, hey, we can't hang out until I get this much done. Or just like, you know, at the end of the day, you just have to force yourself. Like, hey, I'm on this deadline and I don't want to wait till the last minute. So we got to get to work. And so I spent a lot of Saturdays and Sundays working on it, and a lot of, unfortunately, especially during the holiday season when I was having to finish up the manuscript because it was due the end of the year, there was a lot of having to skip Christmas parties, which, you know, really was a bummer at the time. But, you know, if you think about things in the grand scheme, hey, I'm writing a book versus I don't remember ever going to this party because, like, I don't know, it's just another party that I went to, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's like saying no to going to dinner with a friend because you really, really, really need to be responsible and take care of something else. Chances are in 5 years, you're not going to remember those parties or that, but you will remember writing your book. So also just giving myself perspective in that way of, hey, listen, like, this is a really cool project. You agreed to do this. Also, P.S., you signed a contract, so you have to get this finished. And so, you know, also coffee, lots of coffee. And then I did end up taking some vacation days right before Christmas so that I could, instead of having to focus on work, I could make my book my work. So that was really helpful too, to take some time off from my job to really just laser focus in on finishing the project.
Did you have to deal with anything like carpal tunnel or anything? Like,
were you hindered physically? No, because I broke down the chunks and just did a little bit at a time. So it really was only a couple hours here and there in front of a computer at once. So I really tried to make a schedule for myself from the beginning, and really tried to stick to it and say, by this date, I'm going to have these chapters written. By this date, I'm going to have these chapters written, because I had to write the whole outline of the book to turn in as part of my proposal. So the whole book was completely outlined, which made it so much easier to write the book.
What did you learn about yourself writing the book?
Well, not a lot of new stuff. I know that I'm a major procrastinator, but I was really proud of myself that, you know, I was able to sit down and crank out a project that I can really feel proud of, and got it done, you know, on time. Granted, it was like by the skin of my teeth, but got it done on time. And I feel like it's a really excellent product. And so just knowing that, you know, even though I'm 10 years out of college, I can still put on that mindset of like, hurry up and get that paper done.
No, that's, I'm proud you're able to, do that. So the book comes out in June. Where do you buy it at?
So you can actually purchase it on Amazon right now. If you just Google, or not Google, well, I guess you could Google it too, but, you could put it into the Amazon search box, The Catholic Drinkie's Guide to Homebrewed Evangelism, or just put Catholic Drinkie or Sarah Vabulous. It'll pull up. You can pre-order it. You can also order it directly from Liguori Publications.
Okay. But, what's the way that gets you the most money? Like, say the book is $10. How do I get you the most money for this?
Either of them are both great. It's really helpful as an author to have as many pre-orders as possible so that the publisher knows exactly how many to print. Okay. So it would be great. I really, really am trying to encourage pre-orders, so that the publisher can really gauge what the interest is. Also, it does help. This is so vain, but it helps with the Amazon sales ranking. And that can really play into how well your book sells, because people do go and look at those things. So by doing some pre-orders on release day, it'll be a really nice sales ranking. So,
yeah. Everybody I know has a book except for me. You have a book. My friend Melissa, the godmother to my son, she has a fiction book that just came out recently called Will and Lena When Two Worlds Collide. You can get that on Kindle at Amazon. So everybody's writing a book except for me. I feel so left out. And when you said that your publisher reached out, my first thought was going through my head is like, wow, like I feel like I'm wasting so much of my time and my talent. I feel like I need to discipline myself and do more writing, do more blogging, podcast, even if I don't have a co-host to podcast with, and get my name out there. You are really whipping me into shape, I think.
Oh, well, get on it, buddy. Like, and really, writing the book wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be, and so I'm already starting to think about, like, hey, if I were to write another book, what would it be? So, which is really crazy, but
I don't even know what book I would write if somebody asked me to write.
Yeah, see? You need to go ahead and start thinking about that.
Oh, man. What should I write about? What would you say if you were the publisher? What book would you pitch me?
I don't know. No. You don't have, like, I mean, you need, like, a shtick, right? I've got my shtick. No. What's yours?
I don't know. I've got retro gaming, I guess, is my shtick right now. So. And being a dad. That's a lot of work, too.
Could write a book about being a dad.
Yeah. Oh, it's been, I haven't seen my children since the first week of February because I got this new job in Florida. So I've been
here. And your son is going to be giant when you see him again.
Ah, yeah, don't remind me.
Sorry.
No, it's like, oh, geez, Louise, like be thankful. Once, if you ever have a family or children or anything like that someday, don't go as long as I've gone without seeing them, unless, I don't know, you're in the military or something like that. It's
fun. I hope one day I'm as blessed as you are, Dustin. I would love to have a family.
Well, maybe someday you will. I don't like to be presumptive, though. I don't be like, someday you're going to have kids. It's like, what if the person doesn't want to have kids?
And I want to have kids. I want to have lots of children.
Lots of children? Really? Lots of children?
Yeah, man.
Two's enough, isn't it? Two or three?
No, I would love four. Three or four.
I think my wife and I wanted four, but now we've had two. It's like, man, two's kind of a lot of work, you know? Like,
But as they get older, they get easier, so that's the thing.
Yeah, but as they get older, they get more expensive, too. So that's something right there. And then we've got two right now, which means we are good to go with like a two-bedroom apartment. You know, for the foreseeable future, but
yeah.
You've got three or four, you've got to get like a four or five bedroom apartment, and that costs money, and life is expensive sometimes.
Yeah, life is expensive all the time.
Hey, we do have two emails, questions people wanted to know. The first one is from Josh from Ohio. Hi, Josh. He says, there is a stereotype about Catholics being a bunch of alcoholics. Why do you think this is? Sent from Yahoo Mail for iPhone. So, thank you, Josh.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. That's a really interesting question. I mean, maybe because of just I'm so surrounded by Catholics. Most of my friends are Catholic. This is not a common question. You know, it's funny. I was out for happy hour with my coworkers on Tuesday afternoon, and one of them asked me, wait, can Catholic priests drink? So she really didn't know. And so, I mean, I guess the joke is that Catholics are alcoholics just because it's like a good, easy joke that a priest likes to have a drink.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at many Christian denominations or, you know, people who aren't religious at all, and a lot of them enjoy a beverage, you know, Muslim brothers and sisters, depending on what type of I don't know what sect. I guess I'm so bad. I'm feeling like a huge jerk because I don't know how to refer to it properly. But much like I guess denomination, but I don't think that works in the Muslim religion. But many of them don't drink. You know, I was in Dubai in November, and I came to realize that most places don't serve alcohol because it's a Muslim country. But so it's interesting that you ask like why people think Catholics are alcoholics. But I guess you know because. Or just so open about it, and it's just a part of the human condition. I think that we've accepted the fact that it's okay to have a drink in moderation, unlike some other Christian religion or I guess denominations that frown upon drinking. Catholics as a whole don't, but do teach moderation, which is obviously really, really key. Everything in moderation, especially alcohol.
Sect is the correct word, by the way. Just
oh, great. Thank you for correcting that. I really feel
super terrible.
Well, it
wasn't a correction because you got it right the first time. You just had self-doubt, and
yeah.
I corrected your self-doubt. So
I'm sorry if anybody was offended. I try so hard to respect the religions across the world, so... It's all. I love religion. I think it's just a beautiful thing. So.
And the second question I've got, good answer by the way, is from my wife Alicia Faber. She says that she is getting to fly first class later in the month of May. You're welcome, honey. And
yeah,
she wants
way to go, husband.
Might be one of the only times she ever gets to fly first class without any children or anything like that around. So she wants to know what drink you would recommend having on the flight.
Well, so how long is the flight?
It's from Panama City to Atlanta, so that's about an hour, and then she'll get off the flight, and then from Atlanta to Norfolk, which will be about 3 hours or so.
Okay, so she's got two legs. All right. Well, what time of day is it?
Early in the morning.
Okay, so maybe on the first flight, maybe you don't have a drink, but if you do, I would say go with a mimosa or a screwdriver, both really easy. If you're a Bloody Mary person, I guess you could do a Bloody Mary. I'm not a Bloody Mary person, so as much as I wish that I like tomato juice, like I just can't. And
oh, I
so,
love tomato juice. It's
I know,
so tasty.
I want to love it. I want to love Bloody Marys, but you know, sometimes no matter what you tell yourself, you just can't get there. That's where I'm at. So you could do one of those. Also, Delta's really good about having special like monthly drinks or seasonal drinks, and so definitely look at the menu and take a look and see what they might have special wise, because sometimes they're usually pretty fruity with a vodka or something to them. Sometimes they even have a flavored vodka, and definitely worth a look at. I mean, you get free drinks in first class, so really just just go with your gut and whatever works for you. But I find that a screwdriver is always my go-to when I fly. No matter what time of day it is, I feel like I can't be judged for drinking that.
I drink way too many screwdrivers in college. But mine were made with gin. Does that count as a screwdriver still?
No.
No. What is that? That's just gin and juice then, I guess. That's
not really a screwdriver. I don't know if that's really got like a proper name.
I would do, you know, that juice you can buy. It's the banana, pineapple, and orange blend.
Oh, okay.
I would mix that, and you're going to cringe when you hear this. I would mix that with a big bottle of Heaven Hill gin.
Oh, bottom shelf.
Yeah, yeah. It was like $5 for like a giant bottle of
so
it.
So apparently it's often called an orange blossom.
Orange blossom. Oh, I didn't know that.
So, well, there you have it. It was really popular during Prohibition.
That makes sense. Easy to hide, I would imagine.
Yeah. So, well, you know what? I'm going to have to feature this on my blog soon.
Some Heaven Hill gin or the gin
kitchen? No. We'll reference like Hendrix or Tanqueray or something of the sort.
No, you should do a feature like, here's what you should not put in your mixed drinks. You know, you should
We should do a worst bottom shelf alcohol ever.
I will write in a suggestion on that one. So the Heaven Hill, it burned on the way down. It was
I guess awful. You have to also put, if I'm reading this right, you also have to put sweet vermouth in the orange blossom to get it correct. But you know what? We'll just call it gin, and orange juice can also just be an orange blossom.
Yeah, I had nothing like it. I was in college. I did not know anything. I didn't know enough to know that I didn't know anything in college about like mixing drinks and stuff like that. So, but those are our email questions. Thank you, everybody, for contributing to that. So, what do you got next on your book journey?
Well, you know, I'm doing a lot of interviews, which is really awesome, and I get to just meet some really amazing people. I'm also starting to book speaking engagements. So if anybody out there needs a speaker for a young adult event, obviously 21 and up is more my scene. But if you for some reason want to learn more about just some tips on evangelizing, I can change my message a bit for the under 21 crowd. But I do prefer to talk to 21 and up. So just trying to book a bunch of speaking gigs just so I can get the word about my book out there and try to get into that part of the Catholic space, because I think I'm a pretty okay public speaker. So
no offense, but your book is about like alcohol and stuff. I cannot imagine anybody in their right mind like having you speak to like a bunch of high school students.
Well,
and stuff. Like, here's
I do
how
it
you
for,
drink kids.
But I do it fairly often here in Atlanta. I just don't talk about my blog.
Oh, what do you talk about then?
Well, you have to remember that I do social media and I know how to evangelize on social media, and I can talk about that very well without talking at all about alcohol.
See, that's the thing. The alcohol is so ingrained into your public persona. Like anytime I think of you doing anything, I don't think of you, you know, necessarily like drinking your face off from morning to nighttime. You know, I don't think that, but I always think of like anything you do with social media or your blog or whatever involves alcohol in some way. I'm sure that's a misconception, but you know, that's what I mean, see.
Dustin, if you go back through my tweets, look how often I talk about alcohol versus being Catholic.
Yes, I'm aware of I know that, but I mean your handle is about drinking and everything, and I'm not, you know, I'm probably sounding really offensive by now, but you know, but that's just so, you know, with that in mind, like what else do you do like with your time that doesn't involve, you know, alcoholic beverages?
Everything. I really don't drink that much. So like, while I like to learn about it and read about it, I actually don't drink that often. So I just like to spend, just like a normal human, I like to spend time with my friends and I like to spend time on my couch. I love to take naps and read and, you know, so not everything is all about the booze.
That's what we do on this show. We shatter stereotypes. It's great. So I'm glad we could do that. So what are you going to do for a sequel of your book? You said you don't know, but if your publisher approaches you and says, hey, we need a manuscript by the end of the year because your book is selling like hotcakes on the Amazon Prime, what would you do? Like, what would you want to write about? Just, would there be enough material that you cut from this manuscript to include that with your second book? Or would you go in a completely different direction?
Yeah, no, there's nothing else to be cut. The manuscript is done. So nothing to be cut from it.
What I meant to say is material that was, that you just couldn't, maybe that you couldn't get to in the book. Is there enough of that to do another
book? No, I included everything that I had planned to include. I did not overwrite. Thankfully, I did not have time for that. But, you know, I'd probably want to talk a little bit about young adults and the life of young adults in the church and evangelization and things like that. I definitely want my next book to not be about alcohol at all, and to just move into something within the life of the church.
I like that. I think that sounds like fun. I think you should start doing that tomorrow.
Let me get this one out the door first.
So the book, it comes out, you said it comes out in June. What day in June?
June 1st.
Oh, right at the very
beginning. It is so around the corner, man. It's crazy.
I'll get it for my nephew's birthday. He turns 11 on June 8th. So I think that'd be the perfect book for him.
Oh, yeah, that 11-year-old. Yeah, teach him how to homebrew. That's great. I mean, the first half of the book could be applicable to him, but the homebrew recipe is probably not.
Oh, yeah, he might be a little young for that, but maybe I'll keep it. I'll get two copies of the book, and I'll give it to him when he turns 21, and I'll say, here you go. Here's a guide on how to responsibly incorporate alcohol with your faith and lead a good, successful life. See?
Yeah, pretty much, you know, because I do a whole chapter on the wedding at Cana and why this sets up so much theology within the church, especially our reverence to Mary. I also talk about some Old Testament passages and why we use wine in the Mass. I talk about the history of all of the beer brewing monks. I also talk about each of the saints that plays some role with being a patron saint of wine or beer or this and that. Also, Saint Bridget is included in the book. So it's, you know, the front half of the book is all about evangelizing, learning more about the life of the church and things. So while it's got some alcohol undertones, it's really more about learning how to be a faithful Catholic.
I like that. The story at wedding, or the story about the wedding at Cana, always cracks me up. My grandma, God bless her heart, she would always tell us, well, that you shouldn't drink, kids. That's not real alcohol in that story. Jesus made grape juice. So that's the Protestant's person.
Except that it says very clearly in the Gospels.
It's too funny that they think it's grape juice or whatever, and that's what they use for their communion. It's Welch's grape juice. That's the only reason Welch's was created, because the guy was like, the alcohol, it was good enough for Jesus, but I don't think I want it for my communion.
Well, so. Welch's, you know, I mean, they definitely had the brand Welch's back in the year zero.
I hope they did. Welch's is fantastic. I could drink a whole gallon of grape juice. I shouldn't. That just sounds like a lot of sugar.
Hey, you want to know what's really good? Grape juice and vodka. don't do it. It's actually really so good.
Oh, is it bad?
Oh, no, it is so good. That's the problem. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. It is very tasty beverage, and so I try to avoid drinking things that taste too good, because I don't like to drink a lot. You know, I have a one or two drink rule, at a time. So I try not to drink things that go down very quickly, because then I can't enjoy them.
So no Red Bull, or not Red Bull, Red Dog for you then?
No. I'm really into bourbon lately, because I can pour a bourbon drink and I can make it last, you know, an hour, hour and a half. So
back when I used to drink, one of my favorite drinks was I would take like some cherry flavored brandy, and I would mix that with some Dr. Pepper, and it was really good.
Cherry flavored brandy. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, you'll have to try that sometime. It's pretty good. What's a good mixed drink that I can make for myself without alcohol in it that would still taste good?
I really like to put anything with sparkling water, honestly. Like any sort of flavor that you mix with sparkling water is really, really nice.
Oh, nice. Maybe I'll try that. Man, back when I did drink, I would drink cherry-flavored vodka. That was my jam back in the day. Oh, it was so good. It was the three olives cherry-flavored vodka, and I'd throw that in with some Coca-Cola. I don't know if that's good or not, but I thought it tasted good.
I love anything cherry.
Well, I've got cherry tattoos on my arm. Does that count?
Do you really? That's funny. Yeah. I have no Fun fact, I have no tattoos.
You have no Oh, you should get a tattoo. Hey,
no, I am not. I am too straight edge for that.
I like how you turned that back around on me. Using my own lifestyle against me.
Yes, I did.
No, hey, when my wife and I, we come to visit in Atlanta, which we're going to do, maybe we get to see you, maybe we don't. You're a very busy globetrotter, so you might not be around. We should all go get tattoos. That would be so much fun.
Oh, I am too old. I am 31 years old. I am too old now to get tattoos.
I'm 31 years old too. I want to get a tattoo. I'm not too old.
I have made it this far without getting one. I feel like it is now like a badge of honor because everyone has tattoos. And so I want to be the one person that doesn't.
You would fit in great with Japan. They don't like people with tattoos in Japan very much.
Yeah, but they like the people that put those bagel things on their forehead.
Yeah, but that's... Japan's weird sometimes, but I know I want to get like a big Celtic cross, like on my left arm with my date that I joined the church, which just so happens to be Friday, April 17th. So it will be 6 years since I've joined the church. And you were one of the very first people, Catholic wise, that I found and befriended on social media.
I don't know. I don't know if that's a badge of honor or not.
It is a badge of honor because you, without you, and there's a few other people like my friend Emmy, who's, you know, godmother to my kid, people like you and Father Jim Churn and Father Chip Hines and people like that. Without you, I don't know where I would be. Maybe I would have given up this whole Catholic thing or whatever. Maybe I would have fallen off the wayside.
Didn't and congratulations on making it to yet another year. We hope that you hang in there and stay with us.
And the one person that helped, he wrote the foreword for your book. Lino, really, how'd you get that to happen?
Because Lino's awesome.
Yes, he is. His radio show and him and together with Father Dave from Busted Halo, that combination along with people like yourself on social media, y'all really helped me out through these past 6 years of Catholicism. So,
well, I'm really glad to hear that. I know I'm glad to have gotten to know you and call you a friend.
Well,
so
I appreciate that very much. So before we go, where can people find you at on the social media?
They can find me on Twitter at Catholic Drinky, but you can also find me on Facebook and Instagram, all that. But you can just go to my website, www.catholicdrinky.com, and find everything that you need to know.
What are you writing about next? What's your next blogging entry going to be?
You know, I've got a couple that are about half finished right now. One is about how being Catholic is like a baseball season. No. Another one is all about the blessings of friendship. Putting one together about some of my favorite warm weather beer.
Oh, nice.
I have a couple rants that I'm going to come up with pretty soon here, too.
You know what's a nasty beer that people like in the... In the warm weather, I've never figured it out. That Sam Adams Summer Ale. Did you ever have that?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's just kind
of
bland.
That was one of the worst beers I think I ever drank. It tasted like somebody tried to mix beer with Sprite, and it did not work. It was gross.
I could see that, but yeah.
But and what's just for fun? What's the worst alcoholic drink that you've ever had? Beer or mixed drink or otherwise?
I've had a lot of bad mixed drinks, but I can't really think of any off the top of my head. But beer-wise, I've had my fair share of bad beers. I would say that there's a beer called Hebrew, and I really had high hopes because it had such a cool name. It is one of the worst beers I've ever had.
Wow. Hebrew. I thought you were going to go with something like Natty Ice or Bud Ice or something like that.
No, because everyone knows those are bad, so there's no need to continue to hit on them. So they're just bad.
That sounds very merciful and kind of you, and that's a very good trait for you to have.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. despite many people thinking that sometimes I'm too sarcastic out there, I really am a nice person.
Good. I think we've determined that this evening. And what's the best non-alcoholic drink that you've ever had in your life? Or best beverage?
Oh, man. You know, I guess just because it's top of mind, but I had this juice when I was down in Brazil last year that it's just this like cashew juice, and it's a fruit that they have down there, not like cashew, like the nut, but like cashew, it's a fruit. it was just so, so good. And then they also make it into a soda down there. And it was, it's just really, really amazing.
That sounds fantastic. Can you get it here? Any?
I have not been able to find it here, but I really enjoyed Brazil. What they drink a lot of different kinds of juices, and so there was fresh juice everywhere, and it was just
sounds good.
It was just, you know, with the weather that they have down there, it all just makes perfect sense. It just was really awesome to be able to have all this really unique, different juice than we have here in the States. So I know that sounds really crazy, but juice from Brazil.
After the movies tonight, I think I'm going to go around and get some juice on my way home. That sounds really good. Maybe some like cherry juice or something like that. That sounds like
really good. Cherry juice is so good.
You should get Virgil's root beer. Have you ever had that?
I have. It's very good.
Oh,
it's so tasty. Root beer is very good, but you know, I'm not a huge soda drinker.
Yeah.
I have really tried to cut out a lot of soda out of my life. So, when I have a drink that's not water, even if it's alcoholic, it's a treat for me. It's a splurge because I really do try to drink just mostly water, and you know, I have a glass of milk every day too. So I get into my 30s, I got to watch what I eat a little bit more.
I think I almost have like a liter of soda on average every other day. I should probably cut back. I've got the Soda Stream, and I need the caffeine at work sometimes, and it's just a potent combination.
So many calories.
I don't eat a lot of other junk food or anything like that. Most of the snacks I eat is like a fresh food, and I always make sure to have like a green salad with just some chicken, three or four times a week. So it probably evens it out, but
maybe,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, to be fair, you know, I just lost 30 pounds. So
congratulations.
I'm trying to be a lot more mindful of what I put into my body, especially now that I'm entering my 30s. I just really can't do what I did in my 20s. Like, I just can't.
Yeah, I should try to do a better job with that. But we're going to sign off next week on the show. James Ryan is back. We'll be talking Daredevil on Netflix. Have you watched that yet?
Oh, no, but it's on my my Netflix queue, and I just haven't had time. I haven't really watched a lot of TV since it came out, but it is like next on my list to watch after I finish like one or two other things. So,
well, one of the characters actually says to Matt Murdock, who is a blind Daredevil in the show, and they mentioned something about movies. He's like, I don't go and see a lot of movies. He's like, but I do love records. And I thought of you immediately. It's like, he loves vinyl records too. But it's ridiculously violent. There's not a lot of sexy thing. Oh, I think I just dropped something valuable.
Awesome.
There's not a lot
of... Is it really violent? Because I don't really... Like, I can't watch Game of Thrones because it's violent.
The violence, it doesn't permeate itself throughout the show. There's just like a handful of scenes in each episode that are very violent. Most of the fighting is, you know, your basic, you know, action movie fighting. But there is some really, really bloody and gross stuff. It earns its TVMA rating without the help of language or sexual content. So,
okay, well, I want to watch it, I'll have to, you know, I just, violence in me just don't, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, I get kind of queasy with real life violence. I can handle video game violence, you know, easy. That's, you know, nothing for me. But seeing real people carry it out on TV, sometimes I cringe and I turn my head. But
yeah, I struggled to watch one of the scenes in Gone Girl. That was too much for me.
Yeah, Daredevil might be too much, but my advice, just look away and enjoy the rest of the series, which is very, very well acted with good storylines and characters you will care about.
Sounds good. Well, I'll give it a shot.
So, James, we'll be back. These episodes should be up fairly quickly. And I am at 16-Bit Catholic, and you can also find me writing at onemorecastle.com. My next piece, or my most recent piece, The Death of Donatello from Ninja Turtles, was featured on One More Castle. And we'll be talking about the game Crackdown in the arcades next week. But for my good friend Sarah Fabulous, I am Dustin Faber. Everybody, have a great night.